have regulations that have been adopted to administer that statute, and basically what the statute says is that we are to prevent waste of oil and gas and to protect relative rights. Well, underneath that large umbrella, we have adopted quite a number of regulations which cover such things as the drilling of wells, and all the permitting necessary to be obtained to drill a well, and it has to come through our organization. We're also involved with the safety aspect during the course of drilling, make sure the blowout prevention equipment and so forth is functional and tested. We also have the responsibility after an oil discovery is made to investigate that discovery and to develop field rules if it turns out to be a field, an oil field or a gas field. And these are usually developed after during the course of public hearings. And we had, of course, a large chore to develop a set of rules for the Prudhoe Bay field. In addition to developing these field rules, we have to follow up on that and follow the performance of the field or any reservoirs within the field to see that the operator is maximizing the recovery of the hydrocarbons. Since it falls back that we do not want to see waste of oil or gas, so that's the other side of the coin, is to get all of the oil or gas out of the ground if possible. We also have other responsibilities that we keep production records of all the oil, gas, and water that are produced in all the wells in the state. And we have to make this available to the public, which we publish each month in a monthly bulletin. We also do other things as kind of a service, you might say, to other agencies that handle the royalty aspect of the state's production. We check the meters where the royalty oil is being measured to make sure they're functioning properly and the state is getting a true accountability for all the royalty production. And that's a general overview, a very quick general overview of some of our responsibilities. And I'm glad to answer any questions you might have.
Perhaps just each give a 2 minute version of your background.
Okay, I'll get.
Because I haven't had a chance to read your resume.
Okay, well, I graduated from the University of Southern California in Petroleum Engineering in 1956. I went to work for General Petroleum Corporation after graduation. And later on, that corporation's name was changed to Mobil Oil Corporation. I worked for Mobil Oil for 16 years in various engineering positions. About the last 6 or 7 years, I was primarily in the reservoir engineering phase. I came to work for the state of Alaska in 1972 as a reservoir engineer to help develop a study of the Prudhoe Bay field primarily. That was my primary responsibility. I moved up to chief petroleum engineer and then as director of the Division of Oil and Gas, and now chairman of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
Thank you. I'm Lonnie Smith, and I graduated from Texas Tech University in 1956 with a BS in petroleum engineering. And after that, I went to work for Gulf Oil Corporation in Oklahoma and Texas, New Mexico areas, and working at various positions in the field and in the office as on the various types of field work, drilling foreman, directing roundabout work, lease work, all types of production activities and some aspects of drilling activities, and then office work on petroleum engineering staff, and finally evolved to a district office level as a senior petroleum engineer. And in 19 I worked for them 13 years in those various capacities, and in 1969 I took a job with the state of Alaska and moved up here as a petroleum engineer on the Division of Oil and Gas staff, and subsequently progressed to the position of chief petroleum engineer, and in January then was appointed the commissioner with a 6-year term.
I'm Harry Kugler. I graduated in 1951, Indiana University. Went to work for an oil company in West Texas, worked in West Texas for 7 years. moved to Calgary, Alberta, and worked in Canadian Rockies for 4 years, back to Denver for 3 years, and moved to Alaska in 1964. I worked for the old Division of Oil and Gas for since 1966.
The Oil and Gas Commission was essentially created the first of this year, officially.
That's correct, yes.
How does that relate to your past experience with the Division of Oil and Gas? Is the Division of Oil and Gas still a viable agency?
No, the Division of Oil and Gas was done away with, were eliminated at the time we created the commission.
Mr. Chatterton?
Yeah, thank you. A self-serving question to the commissioners. Has your work changed any since January 1?
Basically, no. We're still functioning primarily like we were as the Division of Oil and Gas Conservation.
You were then director of the Division of Oil and Gas of the Department of Natural Resources. Now you are chairman of a 3-member commission. The other two commissioners, they are still ostensibly carrying out the duties that they carried out in their previous jobs under your supervision.
That's correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
What's the main function of the commission? Principal, primary function?
Is to see that, I guess, the oil and gas activities are carried on safely in the state, and the state is getting the maximum amount of benefit from those resources that the companies are developing.
How long have you gentlemen worked together?
Well, I came to work for the state in 1972, and at that time, Mr. Smith and Mr. Cooper were working for the division at that time. I'm not sure when you said you started.
1966, I've been working there. When I came, Mr. Chairman, I came to work there in 69, and so I worked with Mr. Cooper since 69, and Mr. Hamlin since he joined us.
Why was it, if you're essentially doing the same thing you did with the Division of Oil and Gas, why was it changed?
Representative Chatterton can probably give the answer to that better than I can. I'll give you my answer. But as I saw it, I attended a number of hearings that during the time that this bill, House Bill 830, was introduced to create this commission. And there was some concern that if any political pressure could be brought to bear on our body, it would be less likely to happen if we were an independent commission than in a department. And that was one of the concerns. And I think we testified that we hadn't seen any pressure of this nature placed on us for making any professional decisions, but that was a concern, and so they created an independent commission.
No, not by the wonder. I was wondering if you wanted to ask me a question, Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to comment, Mr. Chairman?
I think the wisdom of the legislature was that, and I might point out that there were many, as I recall roughly why the three commissioners have 14 or that number of people in their commission right now as employees, 14 to 17 or whatever. And that was the old Division of Oil and Gas unit in the Department of Natural Resources. I think the legislature looked at it from the standpoint that you can't help but at some point in time on down the road develop a conflict of interest if on the one hand you have a proprietary interest and on the other hand you have a regulatory interest. With this in mind, the legislature saw in their wisdom that the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission be established as a quasi-judiciary commission so that it would be a regulatory agency administering Title 31, Chapter 5, which is basically aimed at the protection of correlative rights and the prevention of waste, of physical waste. Now, that was basically the concept. Now, the state of Alaska can come before that commission with no more or no less of clout than any other party of interest in any matter dealing with.
But the governor appoints them.
That is the that Mr. Chairman is it had to happen, and they do serve at the pleasure of the governor, but I can't help but trust our governor.
Well, it wasn't a question of trusting the governor. It's a question of clout. Was it ever entertained when this change was made that a similar change would be made to the Royalty Oil and Gas Board Advisory Board? If you're taking the fox out of the hen's coop, like apparently done the Oil and Gas Conservation Committee, was it envisioned that someday this might happen to the Royalty Oil and Gas Advisory Board?
Mr. Chairman, obviously that thought has been entertained, I'm sure, by many of the people in the 11th legislature, as it was in the 10th legislature, but it seemed like you take one step at a time, and some of us were only capable of working on one thing at a time.
Mr. John.
Yes, I suppose this is going to be a very basic type of question. What is the length of the term?
Our terms were set up by the bill to be 6 years, but the first appointment would be a staggered appointment. Mr. Kugler is appointed for 2 years, I'm appointed for 4, and Mr. Smith 6 years.
Can you give me an example so that I could figure out maybe in my own mind what the purpose of the of your commission is supposed to be? Can you give me a hypothetical problem there that might be presented to you and the type of decision-making policy that you would be encountered in solving the type of any type of a problem?
Well, one of the things that we have before us now is a study that we're on that's been funded by the legislature and be completed. Hopefully during this session, before the session's over, is to determine if the mode of operation that the operators are following at the Prudhoe Bay field will give us the maximum recovery of hydrocarbons from that field. This is a very large type study, and we get involved in this sort of thing. And we have a routine day-to-day stuff that we do, like examining the applications for drilling wells before we make those predictions. Anything involved in with an oil field, as far as what's in the ground and how to get it out, we are involved in that.
If I may add on to that, we've had hearings on almost every oil or gas field in the state, set up field rules, spacing, so that each field has been handled by the old Oil and Gas Conservation Committee, which is now the commission.
How do you interact with BMEM?
Well, they're in leasing. We're strictly regulatory.
Do you share information? We had a conversation last evening about who's sharing what information with who.
Mr. Chairman, there's a bill introduced right now that is trying to clarify this sharing of information. As you are probably aware, we operate under a confidential statute as far as the information submitted to us from oil and gas well. And this information also can be submitted to the Division of Minerals and Energy Management. They can require this since they are the management entity. They issue the lease and responsible, they are the lessor. But there should be some cooperation between these agencies with this information and not have duplication of efforts going on. We certainly would like to resolve this, and this bill that's been introduced, I think, will help.
Mr. Aspect. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't put the question to any special guy over there, but just put it up and you can pass the buck if you want. We got a lot of things on the Northwest Gas Pipeline, and since you've been in this field, I don't know if you can answer the question or not.
goal what you're working at, but they tell us that if we don't start to use the gas, was injected back in the ground, that we'll be losing it. Could you tell us how much we will lose over a period of 10 or 20 years?
Our studies have shown that if you return to the gas, return the gas to the reservoirs it's produced, the way they're going up there now, you burn approximately 10% of that gas for fuel in the reinjection process. But the gas that is reinjected back into the ground, it is not lost. You can always recover that out of the reservoir. So the loss occurs at the surface in the fuel usage in the reinjection.
That's just using for the pumps or whatever.
To run the compressors, yes.
Otherwise, you're not losing any after you pump it back in the ground. It's just what you burn up there.
That's right. It's stored back in the ground. It can't be recovered again.
Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to stop anybody. I'd like to, while we've got these gentlemen here and they came down, I'd like to possibly explore a little bit about their budget request, if that would be appropriate. Before we got into that, any general questions you had?
Yeah, I think it'd be appropriate. I've got a couple more questions.
Okay, good.
We'll just sort of finish up the general questions.
Good.
Have you had a chance to read Bittner and Monroe report on what's going on in Washington insofar as the gas line is concerned?
I haven't read that particular report. I try to keep up in the trade room on the progress of the Northwest line.
One of the points, I'll just sort of summarize it real quickly. One of the points that they mentioned insofar as leveraging turns out the federal government wants the state of Alaska to participate financially in the gas line, is that they may use on us, against us, is the fact that they may ultimately come in and start managing the crude oil reservoir. Do you see that as a possibility? How would you stop it?
If they did that sort of thing, I think we'd have to step out of the bounds of our conservation laws that we now have, the state's conservation laws, before the federal government could take such an action.
Step out of the bounds of the conservation laws?
Yeah, like the AS-3105 that we're operating under. I mean, as long as we continue to operate under the authority of that law and don't try to do something that we're not authorized to do, I don't see how the federal government would have a legal right to step in and manage that field. All states have conservation laws, and they've been upheld in courts over many years. If the states have this authority.
So you don't really see that as a potential problem?
No.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
It would have to be something of, you know, the president. I guess the president can always do anything in the as a national interest. I mean, if it's that important, but I don't see anything occurring that would allow him to use that.
I guess let me ask you the loaded question. How is gas recovery going to affect oil production?
Our previous studies showed that gas could be produced off of that reservoir at rates up to 2.7 billion cubic feet a day in conjunction with the oil production without impairing oil recovery. You know, these studies were made with a model that we ran without any production history at that time. And the current studies, we have a little history, and we're going to run the larger model studies and try to update that work and have it presented to the legislature here, hopefully in April, if we can get it done.
You're working with Van Poulin?
That's right. And I might add that that's not the final answer. That's just the best answer we can give you at this time, yes.
So nothing's really changed from your original 2.7 estimate?
Mr. Chairman, until we get some more results, I can't say that it has changed.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I think you might have failed to tell the full story on your statement about gas delivery. I think you had a great proviso in there, did you not, that there would be full-scale water flooding occurring?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Chatterton is correct. That mode of operation that would allow 2.7 billion cubic feet of gas offtake rate also was contingent on a large-scale water injection program being initiated to keep the pressure up in the reservoir. Otherwise, our studies show that if you didn't do that, you would lose recovery if you took the gas off without having some pressure maintenance program.
And what are the plans for, what are the plans for the water injection?
The plans of,
let me ask you this way, can you mandate water injection?
Up to a point, we can mandate it if we feel it's necessary for greater recovery, and tell the operator that we think this approach is necessary, and the operator can come back to us and show that if he can't make, he absolutely can't make any money, he's gonna lose money at that approach, then I don't think we can force him to do that. But if it will increase the recovery, and he can at least get his investment back, yes, I think we can. We have the ability to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we start taking the gas off there, who would pay the cost of injecting the water?
The operators pay the cost of injecting water, yes.
Okay, we had a lot of people here in the last 4 or 5 years telling us if we took the gas and injected water, it could cool the crude oil down there and turn like asphalt and put a coating over it. You probably wouldn't get all the oil out, which you would if the gas was up there. They talked about anywhere from that we would lose 70% of our crude oil, some 750. I don't know, Miles probably remember what it was, but I think you remember how different people was telling us that story. Is there any truth to that? That's what I want to know.
There's absolutely no truth to that. Absolutely none. Water injection projects, in fact, water injection or water flooding, you might call it, is probably the most common secondary recovery method used all over the world. And once the water is injected into the reservoir, there's so much heat down there that the water itself is heated up fairly rapidly by just the formation heat. And there'd be absolutely no truth.
What is the average temperature in Crudeau Bay in the world?
In the reservoir, it's the average temperature is about 216 degrees Fahrenheit.
What's the difference? I realize that water injection is a very common secondary recovery method. What's the what your existing study shows the difference with or without water flooding and total recovery?
With just say producing the reservoir with no pressure maintenance at all. I take that back. With some return of the gas, as I recall, I think we were getting something like 34 to 36% recovery, and you could get an additional, say, 4 or 5% by water injection. You're not gaining that much additional recovery yet from water injection based on our other studies. Now, our new model and with additional data we have, that may show a more of a difference than that, but it wasn't that great deal of a difference earlier.
You got a ballpark figure on what it's going to cost?
For the water injection system, roughly $1.5 billion. That would be for a system that would probably have the capacity in the range of 1.5 to 2.5 million barrels of water injection a day.
Other questions from the committee? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, can you make a general remark, putting cost to one side? Gas reinjection lead to more final recovery than water injection?
No, the studies that we had, we ran them with no gas sales at all, injecting the gas, returning all the gas to the reservoir, and with some water injection along with that, compared to gas sales with larger volumes of water injecting to keep the reservoir in about the same pressure in both modes of operation. And we got about the same recovery off the reservoir oil return.
Is that peculiar to the characteristics of this reservoir, or would that be true?
That may be true with other reservoirs, but every reservoir is different, and that is the characteristic of this reservoir.
Chat, you
want
to?
Yeah, if general questions are through, Hoyle, as I understand it, or as I've always, one thing that you did not quite touch on that I've always perceived as part of it, you didn't really come out and sell it, is it? One of your charges is to oversee the prudent management of, in this, let's take Prudhoe Bay, 20 billion barrels of oil, in place of which the state owns 1/8. And you are continually, I believe, to make sure there is not physical waste in an overseeing mode of the operation of that field. The operation physically is being carried on by the 87.5% owners of the field. Now, in this overseeing capacity, you've mentioned that you were having constructed a model so that would facilitate the overseeing, that make sure that proper management is going along. In fact, I believe the legislature even appropriated about $500,000 last year or something of that order to get you started. But all this takes money. And I noticed in the governor's budget that it didn't look like there, where I see that your workload is going to be increasing, your monitoring job is going to be going up. I did not particularly see very much of an increase over the 19 fiscal 79 budget, and I was wondering if you'd ask for enough money. Could you sort of tell us where you stand?
I think it might be easier. I have copies of our budget that was submitted to the legislature. I can pass those out, and I can discuss the money that was deleted from our budget, what activities that money, and what positions that money represented, if that would help you.
Please.
It all depends on money. Mr. Austin.
Sometimes it takes money to make money, and this is one of those times.
I've been trying to tell you all the time.
Chet, it all depends whether you're coming from fish or oil.
No, I work both sides of the street, even reindeer.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll go ahead and go through this. If you'll note, the governor's budget, compared to our request, there's a reduction there of $403,000, about a 19% reduction in what we requested. The budget statement that you see there shows the positions and the monies on the, that are involved, but it does not show the activities that that are related to these positions and monies, and I'd like to review for you, if I would here today, what this amounted to. We had six components that we submitted that were funds in addition to our maintenance budget. Component number one, which was deleted, was an amount of $25,000 for technical services and surveillance. This funding would provide improvements and additions to our current computer data systems so that technical information could be made more readily available to our technical staff. This would certainly improve our efficiency and make our reserve estimates and reservoir studies and the monitoring of our field surveillance activities a lot more up-to-date and efficient. We have a lot of data in our, well, in our computer bank. But we've been working on these programs, but we haven't got them developed where we can have quick access and retrievable access to this information. And that's what this $25,000 was to accomplish. Our component number two was approved and is included in our governor's request. Component number three was in the amount of $92,000, and it was to cover the charge that we were charged with by the 1977 legislature to determine areas in the state where there may be hazard to drilling for instance, drilling water wells and so forth, and we were to make some kind of a comprehensive study and put out maps showing where these areas might occur to warn people if there was some hazard involved, and they would also have to come to us for a drilling permit if we found that and determined there were hazards in certain areas. Right now, there's no permitting through us for any drilling of this nature. Now, we're not trying to have every water well driller have to get a permit from us, but we're looking at other things besides this. If we get into geothermal development up here, people want to start drilling steam wells of this nature. There is no permitting agency, no one to be looking to the safety aspect of drilling that type of a well. And that was why the legislature created this, added this to our conservation statute. And we need those funds if we want to pursue that effort. And this would provide a geologist and with their technical assistance, the one technical stat tech to help you. The component four that was deleted from our budget was an amount of $90,000. And this would provide it for a petroleum engineer and a clerk typist. In the last few years, there's been a renewed interest in exploratory drilling to locate natural gas reserves, particularly in the Cook Inlet area. We currently have 22 gas fields in Alaska, and only four of those are producing gas for sale. There's 14 gas fields that have had one or two wells, and more study is needed on these fields and the surrounding areas to determine their potential size and deliverability. And if we have to start coming up with some more conservation rules for these fields, if they do go on production, we need some work done in this area. Component number five that was deleted from our budget was an amount of $61,000. And this covered stratigraphic investigations. In areas such as east of Prudhoe Bay, where the Point Thompson Flaxman Island discoveries have been announced, the sediments out there just cannot be correlated with it without the aid of stratigraphy. We normally correlate, say, in the Prudhoe Bay field quite readily with the electrical logs running the well. Our geologists can correlate from one well to the other. But in this area, east of Prudhoe Bay, the reservoirs aren't thick, massive sands, and they're lenticular, and you don't know how long area-wise they extend. And the only way you can pin the correlation down and make a meaningful reservoir study is to do some age dating and stratigraphy work of those formations. And we do not have that capability on our staff at the present time. And we're asking for a petroleum geologist with that expertise. The last component number six, in the amount of $52,000, was for an additional petroleum inspector. Our field surveillance work keeps gradually increasing, and we anticipate by fiscal year 80 that we may have the need for another petroleum inspector to keep our program, field surveillance program, at the same level that it is currently. You know, Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Chatterton was concerned earlier in discussions with him that we had enough money in here to continue our work with Prudhoe Bay Field, and we do have the money in contractual services, such as we had this year that the legislature gave us, which means that most of the Prudhoe Bay work will be done through a contractor. We do not have the staff to do that that large type of a study, and I don't want to see ourselves to staff up to that point where we could do that work, and then sometime in the future we will need that capability. And so I'd like to see us continue to contract most of that out. We do have approximately three people that are working on the Prudhoe Bay field almost full time, and our budget that we requested would be a continuation of that effort, about the same way it is now. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the legislature approves the $1.7 million, approximately that the 1.707.9 that the governor submitted to the legislature, will that give you, I heard you mention these outlying areas and so forth and so on, they may be too mature things yet, not really pressing it. You may argue, and I'd like to hear you argue, that they are pressing at the time. But do you definitely with this 1.707.9 have enough money to make sure that our three-dimensional model is finished, that we have ample money to make simulated forecasts of how the field's going to behave, and that you've got enough money in there to provide field on the site in Prudhoe Bay surveillance of what's going on up there.
Mr. Chairman, in response to Mr. Griffin Chatterton, yes, I feel we do have enough money in to provide that type of thing for Prudhoe Bay Field, and we would be cutting ourselves short there, I believe. And I do think that these other activities that I've discussed in the order I presented to you here, component 1 through 6, were the order of priorities that we assigned to those when we submitted our budget. And for some reason, priority 2, we received priority 2, and priority 1, we did not. I don't know. No, I don't know what the answer to that one is, but I do think these other things, they're not, well, there's something, if you move down the road too far, when the time comes when you need this, these studies, you'll be in a catch-up mode, and I hate to get ourselves in that position. That's about all I'm going to say.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hamilton, on the Van Coolen study that's underway right now. You're working with Van Coolen, Dr. Dosher, I understand.
That's right.
Are representatives from the industry being brought in along the way?
Yeah, we've had numerous meetings with the representatives of the industry. In fact, we just had a more recent the week before last, I was in Denver. Just before we put our last bit of data in this big 3D model and press the button, we wanted to ensure ourselves that industry, our values that we're putting in there, at least industry couldn't shoot them down. We just threw them out on the table and said, okay, take a shot at them. And if you don't agree with them, let us know, and we were there to defend our work. And it turned out to be a very useful meeting. It was a full day's meeting, and I think the data that's going in the model is good data.
And industry agrees with that?
Industry is in agreement. The reason for our concern is that that model is, the final model is so large, every time you press a button to run it, it's like buying a brand new truck. And we don't want to be buying a bunch of things that we don't need.
Which representatives of the industry were there?
Representatives from Exxon and ARCO and SOHI over there.
I see. When we finally get this data sometime in around the beginning of April, or when it comes down, what's the next step? I mean, I'm sure I couldn't read that, make tie their hair out of it. Somebody's got to interpret that stuff, right?
Well, we hope we'll present it in a form that at least you can see one operation compared to another, what the ultimate recovery of oil would be. And we'll come down, and Mr. Van Coolen will also be here for any explanation that you'd like for that work.
I guess my question centers around the interpretation there. Once the computer spits all this stuff out that has been feeding into it, is there any question of the interpretation of the data once it comes out? I assume that now we've got everybody agreeing what goes in. Is there going to be substantial disagreement when you come out with the computer printouts, what that says, what that means?
Well, the way we go at this, we try to prevent that. We want our work to represent actually what the field is going to do. And we start off by doing one well model, and then we get into multiple well models with cross-section work before we build that into the big, large 3D model and run the entire field. And we also talk with the operators, and they're doing this same sort of thing. And we look for errors after you make each run to make sure that the thing is debugged and you don't have errors in the program. There's always that possibility that someone else is going to come up with a different answer than you will. And it will, the engineer, I think, looking at the same data, would probably come up with something different. But hopefully they're within a reasonable range of each other.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hoyle, In, when you were making your budget presentation or so forth and so on, or even when you were discussing what had been cut out here, I did not hear you mention anything about the Kaparik area. As my memory serves me, I think the last time that any field rules, and I may be wrong, but it seemed like it was about 1970 or 1971 that you never had any hearings on the field rules for that area. I read in the paper that there might be a potential possibility of people experimenting with seeing if they can economically develop that. Are you all set so that you can handle that if action proceeds there? I didn't hear you mention it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Chatterton, we have done quite a bit of work with the Kaparik River formation. We've completed a study that was published here just this last year, the latter part of last year, on that formation. And it contains what we think are the volumes of oil in place in that formation. Now, we will make additional studies if they get it further developed and do initiate a program there of producing that formation. It's still questionable, and the next few months, I think we'll find out if the companies are going to fund that program. But I think that would, if we needed more money for that work, it would probably come beyond the fiscal year of 80, it'd be money.
What did your studies indicate for the original oil in place over there?
We had approximately, Mr. Krugler handled most of it, I believe it was 3.5 billion.
It was about 3.7 billion barrels of oil in place in the Kaparik River.
That's just lying fallow there now, not earning anybody any money.
That's right.
Is that all on under state leased land?
Yes.
All of it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there additional questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much for journeying down. We hope we haven't inconvenienced you too much.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have, I have copies of what I talked about in my budget, if you'd like to have those for my hearing. Thank you for having me, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sure you are too timid on asking. I don't think it's 90,000.